From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells. Now, could life after death be Silicon Valley's latest innovation? Pulitzer Prize-winning technology reporter for the New York Times and author of An Elegant Defense, among other nonfiction books, Matt Richtel, is back with the pseudonym A.B. Jewell to bring us a novel about a sort of murder mystery in Silicon Valley. It's technology fiction instead of science fiction, and if A.B. Jewell has anything to say about it, this might just be a genre of today in our age of technology. A.B. Jewell, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be called by a name I barely recognize.
Yeah, and
I think if my wife says, "Hey, A.B. Jewell, take out the trash," yeah. I can say, "Wait, who are you talking about?"
Yeah. Now, your friend, I think you know this guy, Matt Richtel, was on the program
right.
4 years ago to talk about the Wandering book.
Yeah, handsome guy,
good-looking guy, great,
very
book.
Very good-looking, can dance, musical.
And I understand can make guacamole, and maybe we'll get into that at some point.
Yes.
But we wanted to welcome you to the program, A.B., and maybe we can start by telling us about the protagonist in your movie. He's a noir pulp fiction detective, slightly different than a lot of the 1930s and 40s fictional detectives. He has a 6'2" husband at home waiting for him. Maybe you can tell us about your protagonist.
Yeah, just to set the stage here, like to explain to people why I'm being a little bit silly, is because that's what this book is a comedic noir. And And, you know, after years of being Matt Richtel, and I can't believe I'm going to speak of myself in the third person. It's so terrible. You know, Matt Richtel goes around Silicon Valley very seriously writing down what people say and covering the issues. And I realized somewhere along the line, it can be hard to take this place seriously all the time. I mean, Tinder for dogs, that is not a revolution. So I decided to take this pen name and write something comedic. And the main character, to answer your question directly, is a detective who is the quintessential hard-boiled, classic Maltese Falcon San Francisco detective. He's the only sane guy in a region riven with greed that is all about the money. And he also happens to be a gay detective. And if you want, I'll tell you how I got that idea from my barber.
Well, I'd like to hear that right now.
All right. So I get my hair cut by a guy who is who's himself a pretty big, tough guy, conservative from a arch Catholic background, and he's married. The true story: he's married to a member of the ATF. Help me.
Firearms.
Yeah, firearms and tobacco.
Tobacco, yeah. And firearms and tobacco. And he's this huge guy, carries a lot of weaponry, and literally breaks up gangs selling guns. And when Tom, my barber, tells me this, I'm like, that guy has to exist in fiction. And I'd already been contemplating this comedic detective novel. I thought, I need one sane stud badass to build this book around, and this is Fitch, your conservative Irish Catholic gay detective.
Love it. Do you prefer being called A.B., or is it just A.B. Jewell altogether? I kind of like the full thing.
Well, if you call me, the pen name comes from A is my daughter's middle name, B is Anne, my son is Benjamin, and then my wife's middle name is Jewell. So if you call me A.B., you're getting my kids, but then my wife's going to get really mad.
Okay, we'll go with A.B.
Jewell. You got to no. I don't really care. Look, you want to tangle with my wife? That's your business.
So pen name, pseudonym, nom de guerre.
Yes.
What is the difference between all those words? I know you like words. So did we settle on pseudonym?
First of all, I want to say I took a pen name because I couldn't take a pen height and a pen weight. I wanted to go about 6'2", maybe 225.
Uh-huh.
But no, that joke doesn't work. I got a guffaw.
Wait.
Now, I've often wondered if, like, a nom de guerre means you have to actually be writing from a foxhole. I don't understand
exactly
why a pen name, you know, they say the pen is mightier than the sword. Is the nom de guerre mightier than the pen name? I don't know. No one's done the math on that. I am willing to call it whichever thing you find most marketable in the way of books.
Okay, well, let's stick then with pseudonym. I like that, pseudonym.
Pseudonym,
and also
yes,
you say you're pseudonymous, which was a new word for us. Pseudonymous? Anonymous?
So I think
pseudonymous.
I think what pseudonymous tells me is that the marketing department of HarperCollins had a thesaurus. That's my walk away.
Because
on that
is a word that none of us have ever heard of before. Pseudonymous.
No, it sounds like a skin disease. Some form of autoimmunity.
It sure does. Okay, so AB Jewell, you,
yes,
as Matt Richtal appeared on,
yes,
our other show on KPCW, The Mountain Life, about,
yep,
6 months ago for An Elegant Defense, which is such a wonderfully written book. We love speaking with you. How did you pull this off, two books in, you know, 6 months?
Well, in fairness, wearing my frank, not facetious hat, this was written much before that. And the folks at HarperCollins who support all these books, they have to figure out when to put them out. And so it actually wasn't written so consecutively. But there's a question beneath that, which I'll answer. Why would I write a comedic detective novel when I spend so much time covering the world in a very serious way? And the answer is precisely because I cover the world in a serious way. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when we in the media take the world so seriously and try to be, you know, good stewards of the truth, it's hard not to see the absurdity sometimes, and we're really not allowed to or permitted to, you know, speak in that tone. Does that resonate with you guys or not?
Yeah, it does. I think
absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
I mean, don't you occasionally look at each other on the show and raise your eyebrows and go, you got to be kidding me?
Well, we try not to be too serious, and we have these little routines we do before the show, like dancing in crazy ways and stuff. So we're not that serious.
Okay, so I don't really, you know, as a New York Times reporter, I don't get a chance to really dance. Like when a guy in Silicon Valley says to me, you know, he's wearing a black turtleneck and jeans and says, this wireless pen will change the world, I have to write that down and say with a straight face, please tell me more. And so over the years, a bunch of observations, you know, fell into my lap about what was absurd about this place, and one after the next, they became kind of the bones of this mysterious life after death mystery.
I just have to say, what did you think about the absurdity of Google achieving quantum supremacy? That seems like again another thing you've got to write down before you forget.
I remember there was a week in some years ago, I did a column about, I think it was actually many years ago during the first dot-com boom, where I counted the number of press releases that had come out over the course of a month using the word revolutionary to describe a product. And you know, it was just patently absurd. Most of these things, maybe none of these things, were revolutionary. But I think quantum supremacy makes revolutionary look like a walk in the park.
Yeah.
I mean, I concede my book, I just want to be very clear, has achieved double quantum supremacy. So while I do say, you know, Google, you've clearly overstated it, in the case of my book, my triple quantum supremacy comedic novel, I meant quadruple quantum supremacy.
Quadruple. Well, the interesting twist on this one was that Google was not looking for publicity. They've been trying to be quiet about this, and somebody inadvertently threw this on the web. They took it down right away, but not before a bunch of people made copies of it. And it's just a bizarre story, but we're going to try to get some more information. We just thought we'd throw that out there to you to see if you had any thoughts.
Here's what I really want to say about can I just briefly, because people may be wondering what is this book actually about, can I briefly frame it so I can explain, actually connect the dots back to quantum supremacy and back to what this book is ultimately about, which is Silicon Valley culture?
Absolutely.
So we've got this detective, and he's sitting in his office, and the quintessential femme fatale walks in, and she says, my dad's been murdered. My dad was this captain of industry in Silicon Valley, and Fitch, our hard-boiled detective, says, how do you know? And she says, well, he tweeted that he was murdered, and the Fitch says, well, what do you mean he tweeted it? She says, well, from beyond the grave. He had figured out singularity, which is some sort of technology meets biology, cosmic notion of life, creating life after death or everlasting life. And so from beyond the grave, our captain of industry starts tweeting that he's been murdered and guides an entire investigation from the afterlife. Beneath the surface of this are two realities. One scientific that actually has some very interesting bearing, and that is whether or not artificial intelligence is permitting us to create a life after death scenario. Can we prolong ourselves after our bodies die? That is kind of a serious scientific notion. But the other is, what is really driving Silicon Valley? And this gets to the idea of what is it, quantum awesomeness?
Supremacy.
Deep space quantum supremacy. But what I think is lost here, and what has come up in some book readings I've done, is extreme anger out here, is that a lot of what's happening is around wealth. And for all the talk about changing the world, there is an enormous amount of emphasis here on making money. And so it often gets cloaked as we're changing the world. And I do believe that what's happening out here is quite incredible in the way of innovation. But I would note to you that even in Silicon Valley, people are awakening to the genuine reality that they have not thought about the holistic notion of what's being created. What do I mean? Well, a big part of Silicon Valley is creating efficiency. As we create efficiency, we are automating. And as we are automating, people are losing their jobs. We are awakening to the reality of that here. Here's how the joke plays out in the book. Well, actually, let me just pause there because I'm being long-winded. I will breathe. You guys see if you want me to keep going.
Okay. Well, I think that there's some people... To continue on with your thought, I think there's some people that are good role models. So, you know, Elon Musk, for an example, trying to solve big problems. And I think that people are starting to take notice of that, because there are a disproportionate amount of people in Silicon Valley that are trying to hit home runs. I mean, they're even writing flatulence apps trying to make money. So, you know, so that sort of thing, I think, is starting to change. That's the only thing I would say. That's my comment.
It's what is starting to change.
What is starting to change? That people are taking a more holistic, and that people are trying to solve big problems versus trying to hit home runs all the time.
No, I completely agree. Look, these things are not mutually exclusive by any stretch, and it's why in the end, I don't aspire as a day job to just mock. I do take a lot of this seriously, and I agree with you. And in fact, if we want to wax serious, look at the questions about universal income, where people are saying here, wait a second, we're putting a lot of people out of work. What might a structured society look like going forward where we can keep people eating when all the jobs have gone to artificial intelligence? So And you look at Elon Musk, who takes the idea of using the sun to essentially power an entire ecosystem from car to home, and then in a circular motion. I mean, it's a devastatingly profound, I mean that in a good way, notion. So your point's well taken. But look, there are many, many side effects coming with what we've done here. I mean, in the book, the idea is to marry the quintessential detective with the reality, the old style quintessential detective of the reality of today. And by way of, for instance, you know how, remember there were always the high speed car chases?
Yeah.
Well, in this book, you've got extremely low speed car chases. Everybody, the Mini Coopers are coming after the good guy in traffic going about 2 miles an hour. You know, they're just, this is life in the Bay Area right now.
If you're just joining us, our guest is A.B. Jewell, sometimes better known as Matt Richtel, Pulitzer Prize winning tech writer for The New York Times and author of many books. He's back with this new book, The Man Who Wouldn't Die. Well, as his technology fiction side of life, I guess, as A.B. Jewell. I have to ask you, A.B., what is a tarantula? I didn't figure out what a tarantula was. I didn't read sort of start to finish in the book. I hopped around. So what is this tarantula?
The tarantulas are one of the bad guy gangs that Fitch finds himself up against. They're drug dealers, but they're not selling cocaine, meth, fentanyl. They're certainly not selling illegal vaping devices, which happens to be a subject I'm covering right now for the Times. They're selling what they call double synthetic Adderall. Fitch says, isn't Adderall synthetic to begin with? They say, yeah, but this is double synthetic. It's revolutionary, and they're selling it to parents and kids who want help on the SAT so they can focus more. So this is the new drug dealer in Silicon Valley. And by the way, when you come up against a tarantula, the problem for Fitch is they themselves are taking double synthetic Adderall, which makes them incredibly focused on a stakeout.
Oh, I like it. Double synthetic Adderall.
That's not just synthetic, because it already is synthetic.
Right.
It's double synthetic. And you can get it with echinacea and wheatgrass, which also theoretically could help your immune system.
Right, right. So that's just before you produce these kids who will eventually be admitted into your preschool, the Bong Bong preschool,
yes.
Isn't it? And so... In the case
of the other
go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, in the case of the Bong Bong preschool, the satire of this is that if you sit down at a date, that an online date, of course, that you end up meeting this person, and if things are going well in the first date, it's about time to sign up your future child for the Bong Bong preschool, because that will give that child the best chance of getting into the best free play kindergarten around. It's satirical, and yet we hear these stories. You know, here in Park City, we don't really do that, but we do hear these stories of what you have to do to get your kid into the right preschool.
Yeah, I mean, people in the book, a couple comes to Fitch, they think they're ready to have kids. They want to get their frozen sperm and eggs onto the waiting list for the Bong Bong preschool, which is the best free play kindergarten with certified free play teachers. That means they are certified in helping children play, and that will help you matriculate to the best pre-kindergarten, the best for pre-play kindergarten, into the kindergarten, into a good elementary school, eventually a middle school, and then the college of your choice. Can I tell you guys something that I think is people don't know about Silicon Valley? If they really want to hear about Silicon Valley, some of it's in this book, but some of it's about what I'm going to tell you right now. And that is, hand to God, although I am agnostic, I want to say this to you. There is a real sense here, guys, that people aren't sure they want to be here. And I'm not kidding you. one of the weird tensions in Silicon Valley is that people come here, they're excited, they're innovative, they're like the pioneers who came here a long time ago, but there's a real sense from people that they are discontented here because of the competitive nature of this place. It is expensive. It's not like New York and Wall Street where everyone's hardened. It's almost as if you've got slightly more chill people, but in an environment that is extremely competitive.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I spent a lot of time out there in my technology career, and I would agree with you. And that's probably why Silicon Slopes and some of these other areas in the country are doing so well.
It is exactly why people are saying, wait a second, I thought I wanted that thing, but when I got in the middle of it, I realized there is a huge emphasis on money. On, you can't believe the conversations that are about real estate out here. All the time they come up, right?
Yeah.
In fact, at one point, Fitch is trying to escape from some bad guys or chase them. I can't remember. And there's a big protest going on. And, you know, San Francisco, he's based in San Francisco. This place is known for its history of protests. But these aren't hippies. They're realtors, and they're demanding more inventory. What do we want? More inventory. When do we want it? Before interest rates go up. So, you know, that kind of vibe is going on all the time.
AB, let me ask Matt a quick question. As I mentioned earlier, when I first introduced you, we had you on for A Deadly Wandering. And one of my takeaways from that interview, so this is a serious question, is that, you know, you said if you take your eyes off the road for 5 seconds while texting at 55 miles an hour, that would be the length of a football field blindfolded.
Yep.
So I wanted to ask you, there's been a lot of stories, a lot of science, and a lot of attention on people that are texting. Is the problem getting better?
No.
Or is it getting worse?
No. I mean, here's the reality. Here's the serious side of things. And it actually is has a very profound punchline. Sorry, I got some feedback there.
And it's getting worse. And we only have about 45 seconds.
45 seconds,
yeah.
In a nutshell.
Okay.
Many more apps that people are using, and many screens in cars that people are using. And what this tells you is, even as we know more and more laws have come into effect, our behavior is driving us to be even worse. Punchline, it tells you how compelling, even addictive the activity is if we're doing it even in the face of knowledge and laws. The problem is worse. We must address it.
Yeah. Got it. A.B. Jewell, he has written The Man Who Wouldn't Die, and it's a fun book. Listen, thanks for being on the program again.
Thanks, guys.
Great to have you. Wow. And actually, one of the things that he satirizes in this book is just that there's a car that has a computer screen in it that is projecting what's actually going out on outside the car, if you were to look outside the car. But of course, you're never going to, because you're more tempted to look at the computer screen that's in your car projecting.
He's a fun guy.
It's crazy.
Good
He's
to have great. Him back on.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. If you missed part of the show or you want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org. under the Shows tab.
We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcasts, so you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name.
So look for KPCW Cool Science Radio and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.